You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live to the cosmos from the backyard at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, April 3rd, 2012. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. We're going to give a shout-out to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. We're sponsored by them. They have a great Beer Cloud app, which you guys should try. Has anyone in the room here ever tried the Beer Cloud app?
Indeed.
Oh, yeah. Caroline's here from Stagset. Caroline Pincus, how are you?
I'm good.
All right. And Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger came back from some travels. Will Stevens from BeerManus.com. And Tim Stendel from Union Beer, greatbrewers.com. All right. So thanks to Great Brewers again. Check out the Beer Cloud app. And thanks to the Good Brew Seal, goodbrewseal.com, an association of New York City good beer bars. All right. Here we are in New York City, Bushwick, Brooklyn, Roberta's, hanging out on a beautiful spring day. And our good friend Jen Swartman has been traveling many places the last few months, and it's so great to have you back.
Oh, well, it's great to be here. Yeah, I've been waiting to be on so I could tell some tales, and here I am. So I had a great trip.
So what was the focus of your trip?
Well, my focus, I called it Jen's Sour and Smoke Tour, because I decided to focus on two of the places I've wanted to see in Europe that I haven't seen that are very beer related. So I went to Brussels and I went to Bamberg. But the catalyst of the whole trip was an invitation from Jean Van Roy about a year ago to basically get to follow him around as he brewed one day. I mean, he's the brewer, and I just was side by side with him, and he explained
everything. Which brewery
everything.
Was that?
Cantillon.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's one of the few, it's really the only purely traditional lambic producer left in Brussels. And Brussels is where lambic really traditionally comes from. And they're doing everything with the equipment from the 1800s that they purchased when they started the brewery in 1900. And he brews one beer. All the variations of Cantillon are variations that are made in the barrel aging, the decision on what fruits to add, the blending. But there's one beer, one recipe, and he brews it 28 to, he's up to, actually this year, he increased up to 32 batches, and he thinks he can do 33 and then max out at that. But in the course of the winter, from November to April, he brews this beer about twice a week, and it's pretty amazing to witness. You really feel like something really special is going on. It's a kind of a magical process. I've seen a lot of breweries over the years, and it's great to see everyone's equipment, and yet a lot of people who see a brewery for the first time are a little bit disappointed, because it's an industrial operation. You know, your concrete floors, and people get excited about, you know, the ceiling height and drainage and things like that. It's not really as glamorous as a lot of people think it is. But this brewery is so special because this equipment is just, it's all still running on pulleys, and it's all, you just feel like it's so manual. And then there's the cool ship room, which is like, he's like, you got to see this magical room the first day I visited. And it really is magic. It's like rafters, and people think that the brewery is like filthy, which it's not. It's actually really clean. It's just not scrubbed, you know, and they let some cobwebs form in the corners and things, and they don't tamper with it, because all of that environment is critical for the inoculation, which is when you actually get the natural yeast and the bacteria to fall into the wort right after it's made. And the day after it's brewed, it's put into barrels, and then, you know, the magic happens in the barrel, and we get to hopefully reap the benefits, although it gets to be more and more scarce because more and more people in the world want it. So anyway, it was an incredible day, and the batch that we brewed ended up hitting a an original gravity of 13.1 degrees Plato, and he said that's a record for him. In 10 years of being the brewmaster after his father, he usually hits, I think he said, like 12.8, and this was a special batch. So I can't wait to hear about LO24, which is the batch.
All right.
Yeah. Sitting in barrels at Cantillon.
Will, have you been to Cantillon?
I have never been to Belgium, sadly.
I had never been, and people scoffed at me for years, but, you know, I recommend it now. Now I understand.
Definitely. Yeah. Did you get to witness any of the kind of additions or the secondary stuff?
I got to try some 50 Degrees is the name of the beer. He's only been able to brew it twice. It's cognac barrels, and I tried the day I got into town, and I was touching base with him and coming up with a game plan. He took me downstairs, and I got to taste it the day before it went into bottles. So I didn't really actually see any maceration of fruit. I saw the only stainless steel they use is for fruit maceration, because they really realize that barrels are sort of wasted on the fruit process. So they're the couple maceration tanks that they implemented. It's the only real modern equipment. I mean, the craziest thing is the keg, keg cleaner. And I'd heard about it, and to see it, it's like these gigantic, you know, they're big wood barrels, and you put it into this sort of frame, and when it's running, it runs almost like a gyroscope. It turns the barrel in every direction, and all that they use to clean those barrels is water, steam, and chains that they put into the barrel. So the chains have sort of a sharp edge, and the movement is what cleans the barrels, and they're still doing it. That, like, not a chemical. Everything's organic. You know, their whole organic designation system in Europe is different than ours, but the only thing that is not organic is 100% of the hops that they have to source, because hops are still the hardest part. But as many organic hops as they can for, you know, what they need. And everything is, it's organic.
So there's a big difference between what Cantillon does and what something like Lindeman's
very
sells.
Different,
right? So Lindeman says that they're lambic, but how
small
do they make
portion
beer?
Is lambic, and then they're cheating methods, you know, like they can kind of fake it, and they, you know, they're not. It's not all spontaneous fermentation. They're actually pitching yeast and things, and so they're really, when you're really into lambic, you don't have as much respect for that. Like, that's actually, those are industrial lambic producers. And then there are traditional, which, like I said, Cantillon's really the only one left. And then there are a handful of blenders who are only sourcing, like, real lambic from the places they can get it. Cantillon actually is the only one who brews all of its own beer to then blend for its beers. But then there's some middle guys, you know, like where it's like they're doing as much as they can, but then they grow and they have to kind of tweak it and tweak tradition a bit to get there. So there's sort of three different levels of lambic. And now I'm like, yep, Cantillon's,
you know,
it.
Of the Cantillon, one of my favorites is the Cantillon Creek.
Yeah.
And how do they make that? Do they really put whole cherries
in it? Yeah. I mean, they use fruit. They use actual fruit. The fafoon is apricots. That's a delicious one. They use raspberries. And yet, you know, you try their framboise next to like a Lindeman's, and it's not even the same category, because theirs still holds all that, you know, sourness and beauty of the beer. The fruit doesn't take over. They really like know how to blend them down. So even their fruity beer, of course, is still quite tart.
So Jen, you're there at Cantillon, the favored lambic producer in the world. Everybody loves them. Well, tell me some anecdotes, some cool things that happened.
Well, I got to see the amphoras, which he's really, really excited about this project. Apparently, Jean went down. I think he was in Italy, and he tried some wine, I believe, and there was something really, he's like, there's something really special about what's going on here. And he inquired, and they said, oh, it's the amphoras. And they're using these ceramic amphoras that are about like 4 feet tall, maybe. And he decided, you know, I want to see what happens when I put my beer in.
The way the Greeks made ancient wine.
Yeah, and they are, I have photos, they're like sitting in one part of the cellar, and they're covered, and he pulled back the cover on one, and it's like bubbling inside. I took a flash photo and then I apologized to it because I was like, whoa, I probably disturbed it. It was like so like active and lively. So we have, the world has not tried it, including Jean, but he's really excited about that project. He really feels a very close connection to the wine world, and he's correct. It's like he is really the link. He's kind of the middle ground between brewers and winemakers, because he, while he is brewing a recipe that is sort of helping nature along, he is at the mercy of the atmosphere and the weather and all those things that affect winemaking too, more so than a regular, you know, regular brewer who can control all the climate and environment and what's happening with his beer. So he kind of like loves to bridge that gap and loves the wine world also. In fact, the last of the Zwanza from last year, the Zwanza 2011, was a project that he did with a winemaker who specifically focuses on, I can't remember the name of the grape, but on this specific grape that's a dying traditional breed. So I was like, wow, that's actually a kind of a kindred spirit in the world. And they took the lambic and they aged it in the barrels. And this particular grape, I'm fascinated by it now. I want to do some research and like see if there's any way to get some, because it had these really specific pepper qualities and fruit qualities that were all coming from the grape. It wasn't spice additions, but the beer ended up with all these amazing spice notes. And so yeah, pretty fun. And then the thing, Zwanza 2012 is going to be a Trappist triple style, like an Abbey triple. And he was all excited. It's been brewed now. He did it in the last few weeks. But he was really kind of like nervous about it because he doesn't pitch yeast. So he was actually going to pitch yeast like a brewer and see what was going to happen. And so he gets, you know, he has fun with it. And he's also been really good. Like his father saved the brewery back when his dad was in charge, and his father's still around. The family's all participating. His sister Julie is there like every day working there, like working with the you know, visitors who are coming through and doing everything else. I mean, she jumped in and shoveled all the grain out of the mash tun when the farmer came to pick it up. And, you know, I mean, she's in there and has been there.
It's a labor of love.
The whole family.
It's not like these guys are cleaning up and driving limousines and having these lackeys make the beer. They're still really hands-on.
Yeah, and they're all participating in there. I mean, the parents have sort of semi-retired, but they pass through on a regular basis. And it's a very tight-knit family, and just a couple employees. They had a couple interns there when I was there, and tourists coming through. And so you can visit Cantillon.
Will, I'm going to ask you, because you're beermanius.com. Do you know what a cool ship is?
I could use elaboration.
Tim from Union Beer Great Brewers, do you know what a cool ship is?
I do know what a cool ship is.
What's a cool ship?
A cool ship is it's a large, or I guess semi-large, probably about the size of this room. I'd say like maybe...
Bigger. His is bigger.
His is bigger? Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, they can vary in size, but they're not huge. But they're shallow pools. And after a beer is made, it's gone through the brewing process, not the fermentation process. It's pumped into...
So it's like the wort?
Yeah, it's just the wort, the sweet barley liquid. It's pumped into this separate container, which is just a shallow pool.
12 inches.
12 inches?
12 inches deep. Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, they have one at Allagash. They're opening one at in Peekskill, actually, in New York. And then there's one somewhere else in the country, in the United States, I'm not sure. The ones that I've seen, it's just in a separate room.
So it's 12 inches deep.
Yeah, and you want surface area contact. Mm-hmm. So in order to...
It's like a wading pool.
Yeah, they actually took the excess. They fill their cool ship. It's probably, the actual cool ship is probably a little deeper, maybe like 16 inches.
But the liquid itself
is about 12 inches deep. And if there's extra liquid, they actually pump that off into the holding tank just to keep it at a certain like height, because it helps maximize what can happen in the inoculation. And it really is only inoculated there from 3:30, about 3:30 in the afternoon is when it goes into the cool ship, when the day has gone the way it normally goes. And then first thing the next morning, it's put into barrels. So it's really not, I thought it was a much longer process. Like I thought it would be a few days or something.
They
just
do it overnight, right?
Overnight.
Yeah.
Not even 24 hours. So pretty interesting. And, yeah, that's enough.
Yeah, no, I've heard about it. I know that Jeff O'Neill has done it, and he's at Peekskill, and I know Rob Todd at Allagash, yeah. But I had no idea what it was like.
I know. I'm eager to get up to Portland, Maine, and see the Allagash Cool Ship, because I don't think the one in Peekskill's up. I don't think they have it yet.
I don't think it's ready yet.
But
I've got a question about the one in Canteon. I haven't had the privilege of going to Canteon yet, but I've heard that the cool ship is actually in the attic. Is that right? Okay.
There are three stories to the brewery. The main level is where, you know, they've got the tasting room and the little sitting area and the little shop. And then you go back, you see the bottling line. You go straight back, and that's where the mash tun is. And then it feeds up into two tanks that end up being the kettles. And that's, so you have to actually have to go up the stairs. I've never seen someone run so many stairs as Jean in a day. Like, he's like, it's just like, boom, up, back and forth, up and down. And I was keeping up as best I could. But, and on the second floor, you've got the two kettles that are going, and then you see the mill coming down from the third floor, and then you go up to that floor, and that's where they keep all the grain, all the raw materials are up there, and then there's this one little like Dutch door that looks in over the cool ship, and it's like, you know, like pointed rafters and two open windows mm-hmm. to the outside with screens that are always open. And because they want to, you know, in Brussels, mm-hmm. there used to be a lot of fruit orchards, and that's why Lambic was, like, why Lambic works there. And sure, most of those orchards aren't there, but the, you know, the environment used to have a lot of, like, fruit mm-hmm. orchard-related bacterium and yeast around, and it cultivated, and then, you know, this environment. I mean, I've heard that, you know, the cool ship, Rob, you know, you have to create an environment. I don't know what he did to get it going. He probably did a lot of research to figure out what could be created in Portland, Maine, mm-hmm. you know, and I hear about people who bring in like wood from, I don't know, old barns that, you know, like trying to get this stuff growing. And yet it is bacterium and yeast. So it does grow.
What's pretty interesting about the idea of a spontaneously fermented beer is that it, and just like John was saying about it being very closely related to the wine world, is that it really is like the terroir, the idea of terroir, yeah. because it's the natural yeast that occurs in the very, very immediate environment surrounding the brewery. So,
and it only happens at certain temperatures. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to like play with the weather. There are certain times when like, he tells a story about a batch that he did in freezing conditions, knowing darn well that it was not going to work because a brewer from Victory in Pennsylvania had gone all the way out there, and there was a plan, and he was only going to be there for a short time, and he had to brew, and he felt obligated to follow through, but he just knew. And that beer is not, it's not like it's been thrown out, but it's just taking, I mean, it's taking years mm-hmm. for it to ferment. It's taking up space. And so he's really wise, having studied it his whole life and being, you know, like fifth generation, I think, brewer of this particular beer. It's like they know their art form. But yeah, they're at the mercy of it. If the weather is different one year, I mean, that could change their production completely.
Mm-hmm. So Jen, you're talking about also Rob Todd at Allagash in Portland, Maine. What are some of the beer labels that he's made that have been made in the cool ship? Because I don't know if I've had any.
Actually, yeah, I'm not the one who would know because we don't get them down here. I mean, it's hard. It's like the smuggled bottles that people who happen to be passing through Portland or go up and visit him, and they happen to come back with one little cool ship.
So he's not,
there's
he's
one
not,
called the Ghoul Ship I got to try.
Ship, yep.
But there were what other ones?
I think the Avance.
Yeah.
The Avance was
made
there.
Oh, I did get to try that. Yeah.
Was Victor Frankenstein made in the cool ship as well?
Could be. I wonder how many he's done. He's probably done a handful.
He's done a few. I think that they're actually going to be coming out with their first goose as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And for those of you who don't know, a goose is a blend of 1, 2, and 3-year-old lambic. And any brewery can balance their goose depending on how they want it. If they want it to be more tart and acidic, they can use more of one particular vintage. And if they want it to be a little bit smoother and sweeter, they can use a different vintage.
Is lambic a term that can be applied to any beer, or is it only for Belgian beers?
No, lambic, you know, and like honestly, even Rob, I've heard Rob Todd talk. He spoke on this show about it, too. I mean, he is very reverent, and he doesn't even use the term lambic for his beers. He calls them the cool ship beers. He's got other names that are referencing that they're that style. But just like you don't use the term Trappist to describe your beer unless it's brewed at a monastery, you really, you know, like, out of respect, you don't necessarily use that term.
Well, and I don't think Lindemann's does. Like, I don't think, I think it's an actual rule. I don't think it's like a, mm-hmm. I think it is some sort of. So maybe it's unspoken,
geographic,
but...
it's style wise, and
some type
and,
of designation. Or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
So Caroline, you jumped in about Allagash. So do you know a lot of the Allagash beers well?
Well, we at the Stag's Head we only serve all American beer, so. So I have done a couple of Allagash nights. I had the Avancé at the Union.
Oh, it was so good.
The Union Beer Festival.
Oh, the thing a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
at the,
yeah, that was the welcome beer, and yeah, it was that a was, welcome.
Uh-huh. Oh, man, that was great.
Yeah, it was quite a welcome.
Are you guys going to do another one? Please?
I'm not at liberty to speak about that.
There was 2 years ago, yeah, great. Union Beer did a really awesome portfolio tasting in New York.
It was incredible.
It was pretty great.
Yeah, it was great. That was the first time that I met most of those brewers. We were lucky enough to have a lot of brewers come to New York to speak with all sorts of purveyors from around not just Manhattan and Brooklyn, but Staten Island, Long Island, Westchester, all throughout the 13 counties that that Union Beer services, and it was a great opportunity.
Got to ask a lot of questions of the people who know the answer. Like you really did like feel like you could tighten up your information if you utilized that room, because it was amazing.
This is an awesome group, and we're definitely going to talk more with everybody, including Caroline from Stag's Head, which is a good beer seal bar, as well as Jimmy's Number 43 and Blind Tiger. And we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be on the air with Wynn Bessett, who is a beer writer down in North Carolina.
Great.
And we're going to ask some questions about North Carolina beer on Beer Sessions Radio.
Deep in the ocean at the catfish hall, all of the fishes had a deep sea fall. First came a whale dipping on her tail, then came a tadpole along her trail. They were rocking, ooh, they were rolling. They were rocking and rolling, rocking at the deep sea fall. Then came the lobster, he was doing the pop. Then came the codfish doing the hop. Oh, Mrs. Octopus was doing the stroll, while Mr. Salmon did the rock and roll. They were whaling, ooh, they were sailing. They were whaling and sailing, whaling at the deep sea ball. Oh, Davy Jones was leading the band. He had a pretty mermaid holding his hand. Then came the seahorse.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. If you haven't been to Brooklyn, you should come and check out Roberta's in Bushwick. That's where we're recording every Tuesday at 5 p.m. You can come and sit in with us, too. In fact, we might ask you to sit in with us, and you can ask a question. Talking about new friends from around the country, a guy who is due to come up to Brooklyn and hang out with us, Wynn Bessett. I know him as at Wynn Bessett. He's a prolific beer Twitter guy. I see he posts like every 20 minutes on Twitter, and he only writes about North Carolina
beer.
Where
is he? Is that true, Wynn? Carolina?
How are you, Wynn?
Hey, how you doing?
That's so cool. Do you only tweet about North Carolina beer?
The majority of my tweets are about North Carolina beer. I throw some national stuff in there and also handle some other Twitter accounts for some other publications. But for my personal, I mostly stick to North Carolina beer.
Where are you located, Wynn?
I live in Raleigh, North Carolina,
I
work all around the Triangle, so also work a lot in Durham and Chapel Hill, too.
So, Wynn, you started at ncbrewing.org to focus on good North Carolina beer. Why did you do that?
I was a big, I guess, craft beer fanboy, and there wasn't a central place for news and get people together that enjoyed North Carolina beer. So just kind of started this community around the website. And it blew up fairly quickly and became one of the go-to sources for North Carolina beer news, and that led to several other opportunities.
Yeah, there is quite a movement going on down there from what I hear. I mean, yeah. I actually lived in Raleigh, North Carolina from 97 to 99 right before I moved to New York, and I was even affiliated with the beer world through my boyfriend who was selling beer for Gary Greenshields. Greenshields Brewery, okay. Do you remember them?
And
it was just, so far ahead of what's going on now. Like, there wasn't much going on back then, and so it's pretty exciting.
It's very exciting, and unfortunately, Green Shields isn't around any longer, but as of last week, we had two more breweries come online, so North Carolina's up to 60 operating breweries now. Yeah.
Wow. We've got some great people in the studio with us, too. We've got Will Stevens from BeerMenus.com. Will, do you cover anything in North Carolina yet?
Yeah. We've got a will and a win, so this is going to be a little
what was
confusing.
That?
Yeah, I thought you said win, but yeah. I said will, I guess.
But when Will Stevens is here from beermanias.com. Will, do you cover anything in North Carolina yet?
Yeah, we. I guess since the last time I came on the show, we have opened up beermenus.com to allow places in other cities, in any city, to use the website, and definitely a lot of places have hopped on in North Carolina. It's definitely been one of the more popular states in that area. It's been great to see places down there kind of hop on it without, you know, us even telling them about it, just kind of finding out about us.
Cool. And Wynn, Mr. Wynn, Wynn, tell us about some of your favorite breweries and bars in North Carolina, because we've got people listening from all around the country. So,
right. Well, right now, you know, in Raleigh alone, we have several breweries. There's Big Boss Brewery. There's Natty Green's Brew Pub. Most of North Carolina breweries still distribute solely within North Carolina. There's a few that are distributing some surrounding states. Mother Earth Brewery in Kinston, which is on the east coast of North Carolina, they announced today that they're expanding their distribution outside the state for the first time to the Atlanta area. We also have probably, I guess, the largest production brewery in the state, Highland Brewing
in
Asheville.
Right, yeah.
Right, and they distribute to seven states. So folks who live outside of North Carolina probably have the best chance of getting their hands on some Highland beer.
They did exist back then. They've been around for a while, right?
Yeah, Highland's been around, I think, since 1994. So they're one of the pioneers, and their founder, Oscar Wong, is certainly, you know, one of the huge four founders of craft beer in North Carolina.
Wow, man. All right. Well, what changed in North Carolina? Were there some law changes? And you also talk a lot about there was an article you wrote or something about senators, and you're very active in this whole politics. What am I saying?
Right.
You tell me. Come on.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm a lawyer by trade, I guess. And I'm also the executive director of the North Carolina Brewers Guild, so I try to keep my ears to the ground on any policy or laws coming up. There were a couple brew pubs and breweries around the state early on before, you know, when our ABV, I guess, cap was pretty low. It was right around 5%. And then in 2005, Sean Wilson, who's the founder of Full Steam Brewery in Durham, led a campaign called Pop the Cap that raised the ABV limit in North Carolina to 16%.
Yeah, and that's always a big deal. That opens up a lot of creativity.
Creativity. Yeah, right. And between the time between 2005 and now is really when craft beer in North Carolina has been booming as a result of that law and as a result of just the entire, you know, revolution across the country.
That's amazing. And when did you start doing your blog and all that, writing about beer and everything?
Started writing for the blog. I guess it went online July or August last year. And as soon as I started writing for the blog, I also started freelancing for a bunch of other publications. Southern Brew News, which is part of the Brew newspapers, did some writing for All About Beer, and then for, you know, the Raleigh newspaper and some the Brewers Association on their website, too. And freelance more and more, and started writing more and more. And that's when eventually I switched to, I was a DA, a district attorney in Raleigh full time doing criminal prosecution, and decided to make the leap to my passion. And now I practice beer full time. Like I said, I'm executive director of the North Carolina Brewers Guild. So, you know, I help protect and promote small North Carolina breweries across the entire state. And then I'm also, I lead the social media and beer education for All About Beer magazine.
Wow, that's awesome.
You know, another great brewery that I love down there, that stuff I've had, though we don't really, it's bits and pieces I have exposure to, but Duck Rabbit.
Duck Rabbit, yes, the dark ale specialist.
Yeah,
they're in Farmville, North Carolina, which is kind of, it's between Raleigh and the coast, and they're ones who've been around for quite a while, and you'll also find them in some surrounding states. But you know, they're famous for their milk stout.
We know Mother Earth too. They've been up to New York with Dave Broderick.
Yeah,
last year. Yeah,
Josh Brewer's known Dave for a long time from his previous incarnations,
Absolutely.
And then so they all came up you know, it was a, it was honestly a couple of years ago, and we actually had a little, we got to do a little tasting. They brought some beer up with them, and so it's good to hear that they're doing well and growing.
Yeah, Mother Earth's doing extremely well. Their next beer release is just a few days from now, April 11th. They have this beer called Triple Overhead, which is a bourbon barrel aged triple that they brew every year. And this year, I got to taste some off the tanks last week when I went down to the brewery. And this year's is especially bourbon-y. They're using mostly fresh barrels, and it tasted pretty good.
Wow. Well, Wynn, we're going to give you some quizzes right now. Caroline from Stag said, in New York, we get a lot of international beers, especially from Europe. I don't know, what is it like down there for you guys? Do you get a lot of beers from Europe, or is it mostly the North Carolina beers?
Oh, yeah, we get tons of international beers. I know earlier in the show you're talking about Cantillon and some others. We get, it's been increasingly hard in the past couple of years to find Cantillon here, but we get it, and we get, you know, Fantôme, and we get Bone and all those from across the world too.
Awesome. Well, Caroline has a beer that we've been drinking, so you can know what we've been drinking on air. What beer were we drinking, Caroline?
The Berliner Weiss from 1809. Now, I'm not the authority of international beers, but that's what the bottle says.
Dr. Fritz Bream. Yeah, it's like they make traditional style beers.
It's fantastic.
So we're talking about sour beers. We're drinking a Berliner Weiss.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, the 1809 is the classic Berliner Weiss.
Yeah, they also make a Gruet too, don't they? That same guy, am I right?
I believe they do.
I think so. It's a pretty good Gruet.
He actually just came out with another beer called a Grzycki. I think it's a smoked rye sour beer.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Have you tried it?
Yeah, I did. It's incredible.
Wow.
Bee United actually brought a tank container over from Germany, and so we got it as absolutely fresh as possible. If you don't know anything about the Bee United tank container program, I highly recommend looking into it. What they're doing is absolutely revolutionary in the importing industry.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, we're able to get incredibly fresh product at a minimal cost.
They bring tanks of Schlenkerlaw over too, and
yeah,
keg them on this side. I talked to, when I was at Schlenkerlaw, which is another story I'll tell later, Matthias was telling me about that, and I didn't even necessarily know that they were doing that, but it's pretty amazing.
I was able to just try recently a beer from Thornbridge Hall, their Raven, the black IPA. It tasted like it was fresh out of the tanks, and they had kegged it off maybe 2 days prior, and the tank container had arrived that day, so it was literally from right out of the bright tank.
That's an amazing program. Wynn, we're just trying to throw some European beers at you, because just to see what the scene's like down there. So you really know your stuff, don't you?
I try to. Y'all talking about Berliner Weisses. I'm really excited that there's this whole sour fad right now, and I hope it sticks around. And there's also the low ABV fad. Coming in with Session Beer Day, you know, this Saturday. And that's what I really like about Berliner Weiss, is you got the sour factor and you also have the low ABV factor. And with, I don't know about, you know, New York, but the weather's certainly warming up fast down here. So a Berliner Weiss outside, you know, midday sounds perfect right now.
So I agree.
Wynn, let me ask you something. Just because my bar, it's in Manhattan, and we only do American beer there. I'm curious to know if, I've never been to North Carolina, mm-hmm. or really anywhere down south, if a lot of the bars there do sell international, or they focus primarily on local stuff, or they focus primarily on stuff on the Eastern Seaboard. Because I always feel like I'm one of the only people. You know, most people have this huge breadth of knowledge of international beers, which I do not have. But at the same time, I like focusing on the domestic stuff. I was just curious to know if it's a similar scene down there.
The majority of bars here do have just East Coast stuff. Some of them, you know, solely advocate drink local, and some of them only have North Carolina beers. But for the most part, you know, we're all along the eastern part of the United States. You know, we see a lot of North Carolina beers, but we also see stuff from Georgia like Terrapin and Sweetwater. And then all the way up, not a lot of New York beers other than Brooklyn and Southern Tier. I'd love to get, you know, Ithaca Flower Power down here or something like that.
We love to get it when we can get it here too.
Right, yeah, mostly East Coast.
Yeah.
There are an increasing number of, you know, specialty beer bars here that do cater more towards, you know, the the educated, you know, beer lovers who are really looking for the international flavor. And they certainly do carry, you know, a wide variety of international beers. But for the most part, your average town in North Carolina is not going to have international craft beer.
Right, because that's a bit of like a, I don't know, it's, yeah, I can see both sides, because, you know, you do want to support local, you do want to support domestic, and, you know, but then at the same time, not to have that
it's
exposure
also
is
great
kind of
to, yeah, great to keep people's palates aware of what's going on outside their region as well. So it's like, you should, my philosophy is always like, drink as much as you can locally, and then supplement with great flavors and things, so you always are abreast of what's going on outside.
That's a good, that's a good philosophy.
Absolutely. I like that thought.
When are you part of any special tastings or events that showcase the North Carolina breweries, or are there any special Brewers Guild events going on in North Carolina that we should know about?
The next big festival for us is Hickory Hops. It's the annual guild meeting, actually. So, you know, all 60 North Carolina breweries are in the guild, and they get together one time a year and hold their annual meeting before this festival, which is in Hickory, North Carolina, which is where two breweries are located right now. Old Hickory, I'm not sure if you've ever heard of them. They just distribute in North Carolina. They just started heavily bottling in the past year, but they're famous for their double IPA called Death by Hops, and it's fantastic. There's also another brewery there called Lowe's Brewing, and he's just a couple months old. But Hickory Hops showcases almost all North Carolina beer, and that's the next big festival that the Guild's a part of.
And when's that? When is that? When?
It's April 21st or 22nd, whatever that Saturday is.
Sounds awesome. Hey, Will Stevens, not Wynn, but Will Stevens, beermanias.com. Will, any other question for Wynn, now that you're down in North Carolina too?
I found that, you know, in different geographies or different regions within the U.S., some areas or some cities tend to have places that tend to rotate their selection more often at bars in particular. And I was just curious if you've found that, you know, at a typical beer bar in North Carolina, do they change their selection as often as most of the places do here in New York?
I think they do. You know, when you're talking about beer bar, I conjure up, you know, third craft beer destinations and not just your average town bar. And the beer bars, or the ones that call them beer bars, really do change up their tap selection quite a bit.
Well, it's, you know, 60 breweries.
A lot of them will keep, you know, the same breweries on and switch their seasonals out. A lot of them will keep, you know, a lot of the year-round North Carolina stuff, and just switch out the other part of the United States beers seasonally. You know, there's one bar that comes to mind, Draft in Raleigh. Mm-hmm. I think he's up to, you know, 40 or 50 taps. And he always has it about 30 solely North Carolina taps.
Jesus.
And then the rest are just seasonally changing from other parts of the country.
That's amazing. Wynn, can you stay on with us for the next segment?
Absolutely.
Great. So we're going to take a short break. We'll be back to talk more about beer on Beer Sessions Radio.
How novel.
Right. Yeah.
You know that gypsy with the gold cap tooth? She's got a pad on 34th and Vine. Selling little bottles of love potion number 9. I told her that I was a flop with chicks. I've been this way since 1956. She looked at my palm and she made a magic sign. She said, what you need is love potion number 9. She bent down and turned around and gave me a wink. She said, I'm gonna mix it up right here in the sink. It smelled like turpentine and looked like India ink. I held my nose, I closed my eyes, I took a drink. I didn't know it was a day or night. I started kissing everything in sight. But when I kissed the cop at 34th and Vine, he broke my little bottle of love potion number 9.
Might say this. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Wow, what a month we've had. We had a big party for the 100th anniversary, 100th episodes of Beer Sessions Radio.
Wow, you've been around a while.
You know what we're drinking, Jen? What are we drinking? Because I'm starting to lose track of things.
Well, The thing in your glass is Pêche Mortelle, but not normal Duduciel Pêche Mortelle. Normal Pêche Mortelle is like 9.5% alcohol, so it's no slouch. This is a special bottle of bourbon barrel-aged Pêche Mortelle from 2010. And so it's got an extra little kick. And, you know, the great thing about this is that they handled the bourbon so well because it's not overpoweringly bourbon flavored. There's a little undertone. You know that something else is going on, but they didn't take it over to the point where you can't taste the coffee. So it's a really nice.
Well, you know, I'm
nice
just one. Sitting here smiling now from that beer. It's like
we made
hey,
Jimmy buzzed.
Awesome. We did have a Jimmy's number 43 last month. It happened to be on St. Patrick's Day, which was awesome. We had the brewer Luke Beam and Stefan, one of the owners of Duduciel. There's Luke Beam and there's Stefan Ostegay. They came down and we had a Duduciel night. We had a beer dinner.
On St. Patrick's Day?
And it was on St. Patrick's Day. That was the weekend they wanted. It was awesome. It changed the whole vibe.
Yeah.
We hung out for a long time. But these are the kind of beers they brought down. They brought down these special limited barrel-aged beers. And it was all 10% beers on St. Patrick's Day. We had a great time.
It wasn't all 10% beer. But I mean, their Kolsch was gorgeous, and it was I was there. It was my way of unwinding from the madness of being behind the bar at the Blind Tiger all day.
Yeah,
and it was actually a civil, wonderful event, and so we all drank really good beer, not green beer. It was great.
That's what we do in New York. Win. But right now, we're going to also talk to some of the other people here. So Caroline is one of the owners at Stag's Head, which is a good beer seal bar.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us about how you guys got started and why you guys have a craft beer focus.
Well, we got started about 3.5 years ago, and I started about 3 years ago. It was sort of this Irish bar. Be careful not to offend my business partner, but it was sort of an average Irish bar. And I didn't work in the industry before, but I'm from California, and I'm from Davis, which has a huge beer culture in that town, and just saw the way that everything was trending in the city, knew what I liked personally, knew what young people were doing in the city, and just, you know, sort of relentlessly bothered my boss at the time that to change it over to All American Craft. So we do 16 draft lines. 14 of those are rotating. We keep one permanent line for Chelsea Brewing Company, which is Manhattan's only brewery. And then we also keep a nitro. We keep the left-hand sawtooth.
That's
on.
That's not exactly true anymore because now there's
is
508.
It? Yeah, okay. That's
so just to make sure that...
Where is that now?
That's in the West Village, and it's a brew pub. They're not distributing.
Okay.
Yeah, yet, it's like a restaurant that
but
has...
But at least he is brewing in the basement of the restaurant on a one-barrel system, and he is commercially... Okay. Like, so just so
cool.
You...
Cool.
But so at Stag's Head, tell us like two or three of your favorite beers that you have on draft right now.
Let's see. Well, at the moment, I got some good stuff down from Cape Ann's. Jeremy Goldberg is the brewer up there. He's
in Massachusetts.
In Gloucester. It's fantastic area. He brought down a honey pilsner, which is great. And then I also have the Dunkelweiss from them on right now. Even though we do only domestic stuff, tomorrow I'm doing an April Fool's event, and so we're doing all international beers as sort of like...
So which beers are you bringing in for that?
I'm really excited. I put on, I mean, nothing crazy, it's just sort of an introduction for our regulars, but a couple from McKellar from the Single Hop series, the Hitachino Whites, the Saison DuPont, Duduciel, the nice. IPA, I believe. The Schlenkerlaw? Yes, mm-hmm. The Weiss also.
Great.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about that just for our regulars and for me and, staff. So.
Why don't you turn the tables and why don't you interview Caroline? Because you're down in North Carolina. Ask her about her New York bar.
Yeah, I went to New York, I guess, in January with the North Carolina Department of tourism promoting North Carolina beer and had a chance to try Ithaca Flower Power and had some Captain Lawrence stuff too.
We're drinking Captain Lawrence actually in the studio right now.
Did you bring this, Caroline?
Yes, I did.
What is this? Because it tastes like it's a sour beer.
This is their Nor'easter, which is their winter seasonal. I believe the Beer Advocate wording is Belgian strong dark ale. It's about clocks in about 13.
It's like elderberry or something.
Yeah,
like
it's brewed with elderberry. But this particular bottle was actually aged in oak barrels, and I believe they added wine grapes. I'm not sure the variety. So
that's what we're tasting.
That's what we're drinking now.
Jen,
but
do you know about the Captain Lawrence sour beer series or something? What are they doing?
I had the pleasure of going and blending three sour beers for a Blind Tiger event about a year and a half ago, and that was in his old facility. He's now in the new brewery that I haven't seen yet, but I'm excited to go up and see it, and he's going to have a lot more space. But he had barrels everywhere, all the way up to the ceiling, and he was taking samples off of all these barrels and was really having a great time blending. He has been working with sour styles since he opened, because in the first year he was open, he won a gold medal at the GABF for his Cuvée de Castleton, which was the first year that there was actually an American sour category, and he won the gold. And then I believe it was 2 years later he won the gold again for Rosa y Morona. So he is like,
is he using a cool ship, or what is he doing?
He's not using a cool ship, but he is aging in different barrels. He is working with yeast, you know, Brettanomyces. He's working with lactobacillus. And so the thing is, like, Russian River may not have a cool ship to do traditional open spontaneous fermentation, but some of the best sour beers that are very well respected. I mean, Jean Van Roy loves Vinny's beer. You know, I mean, he doesn't deny it, but Vinny is also not claiming, oh, I'm exactly what Cantillon is at all. He would never, ever say that, but he's making sour beers of a wonderful ilk.
We're going to also go through other guests. Tim Stendahl is a great guy. He's my manager. He sells to me the medium beer, but you're also involved in some other cool projects.
Yeah, I have. I've been doing a sour beer event with a partner of mine in Minnesota. We've been doing it in Minneapolis for the last 5 years, and we've done it the last 3 years. It will be 3 years in May. It's called Where the Wild Beers Are.
I know, such a good name.
So the basic concept is that people tend to collect sour beers because you can age them for a long time because they tend to be bottle fermented. The low pH means that they're not going to be infected, and even if they are, they're already sour. So.
They also tend to be pretty small releases,
right.
And so they end up being coveted.
Right.
That's
right.
Another element. Right. Yeah.
And so people tend to gather collections of these sour beers, and I was always looking for some format to open, some forum to open these with other people who would appreciate sour beers. So we started this event in Minneapolis 5 years ago where people would just bring their favorite sour beers, or they would bring a sour beer to share. And we had a keg that we always poured off for free, but people just came and they bring whatever they've been hoarding. And so everyone gets an opportunity to try something different. I've had the opportunity to try some incredible sours since we started this, like the Cantillon Lurik, which was really only it was an accident. It's a stalled fermentation, so it took like 12 years to finish.
One of those.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking about that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what made me think of it. The Duck Duck Goose, the Yellow Bus, all from Lost Abbey. All sorts of great stuff. I was able to get a keg of the Cantillon Cuvée de Champions.
Mm-hmm.
Allagash sent down a keg of their Allagash Larry a couple years ago. It's just tremendous opportunities. And so this year we're going to be having it at the Gutter on May 5th from 1 to 5 p.m.
Anybody can come and just bring.
Yeah, anyone can
some
come.
Sours.
Yeah, this year we're going to have a $10 entry fee because we've lost about $1,500 a piece on it every single year that we've done it. So we just need to cover our costs. But we've got a keg of the Smutty Nose Brettanie that everyone will get to sample.
I had that the other
Isn't that
night.
Great?
Wow.
It's phenomenal.
So good, yeah.
They made it once in 2007, and it was great back then, but this is
so
a completely
good.
Different. Beast.
You also teach homebrew classes, don't you?
I do, yeah. I worked for a homebrew shop in Minnesota before I moved out to New York called Northern Brewer. And when I live in Brooklyn right now, and about 10 months ago, I saw some blog posts about a homebrew shop opening in Brooklyn, and it was literally across the street from me. And what was unique about this place is that it had a 25-gallon brew-on-premise system. So I went to them with this idea of brewing clone batches. And so all these breweries that are willing to participate, they send me the recipe for their for some of their beers, and so I teach a class at a homebrew shop called Bitter Nesters on Washington Avenue in Brooklyn.
What's their website? Because it's a pretty cool place.
Yeah, it's bitternesters.com. I think you can also get to it by going to citybrewshop.com. They have a Facebook page, and you can sign up for these classes on the website. It's $65. It's the second Saturday of every month, and we have everything set up through June of this year.
So there's a couple really cool things going on in New York, always about beer, and we're trying to give Wynn a little perspective on New York's beer culture. And Will Stevens, beermenus.com, you guys started as being you just suddenly went from nothing to being like the top search. Anytime I looked for a beer, it was Beer Menus, and now you're all across the country. What's new and what's different? Because beermenus.com is my favorite beer site.
Mm-hmm. It's nice of you to say.
What about greatbrewers.com?
Beermenus.com's on.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically trying to stress the point with anyone who sells beer that at this point it's kind of becoming like a bare minimum to give drinkers an accurate listing of what beers they have online. Kind of the hunger of craft beer fanatics to know exactly what's where and to be able to track down their favorites is so strong that people are learning that if they post one kind of obscure, sought-after beer, people will travel a really long way to get it. So we started out the website a few years ago primarily in big cities, and we've kind of been expanding to more rural areas, and we're finding that it works pretty well in rural areas as well, and people will travel a long way to find a beer even if it's not necessarily in a huge city.
Do you know all the bars that participate in beermenus.com?
What do you mean by no?
Well, do you know all their names?
The venue
name? Can you rattle them off right now? That's what he's
well,
asking.
I'm trying to go somewhere. But.
I think we're about to tip the 3,000 number of places that update.
We don't have time for that, Jimmy.
Well, what about, pick one or two from North Carolina that come off your head.
I think Draft uses our site.
Yeah, they do. I'm actually looking at the North Carolina places right now, and the one I mentioned earlier, Draft, is on there, and a couple other places that I frequently go to are on there, so it's good to see.
What are the names of those?
The Raleigh Times Bar, they're one of the ones that has quite an extensive Belgian and international selection in downtown Raleigh. There's also a Tribeca Tavern and Rockwell's American Grill, and they're both in Cary, which is between Durham and Raleigh.
All right. And Carolyn, you use Beer Menus, don't you?
Oh, yeah. And we get the, you know, thing where if you don't update it for 24 hours and somebody calls and you don't have the fisherman's tea party, you know, something esoteric, you know, something completely one-off or whatever, and the disappointment, you know, when you don't update.
We're going to raise our glasses to beermenus.com and also to Wynn Bassett. Wynn, it's so great having you on. We will have you. Everybody here will be back again,
Wynn.
I'm sure. We're going to do a little.
I had a blast. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks, man. Will you be down at Savor, the Brewers Association event?
I will
DC?
Be.
Yeah, so it's coming up. The Brewers Association will present the 5th annual Savor, an American craft beer and food experience, Friday, June 8th and
DC.
Saturday, June 9th in DC. Are you going to go, Jen?
I've never been. Yeah, it's hard. I have to take a weekend off from work. So
see, that's tough. And
yeah.
We're trying to go down, too. Maybe Beer Sessions Radio will be down there. And I would check out, starting today, April 3rd, there's a limited supply of Savor. Pre-sale tickets will be available exclusively to American Home Brewers Association and Brewers Association members. So check out Savor.
But they go on sale in 2 days, I think, to everyone.
So everybody can get them.
Yes.
And good beer sale events, tap takeover on Jimmy's number 43 on Thursday.
This one's exciting.
Wow. It's actually a Thursday tap, so it's come on over and try the Transporter. Jen Schwartman.
Yeah, I saw that Jimmy was
going
to talk about this. Yeah, I participated. This was my beer camp beer, so I get to try it for the first time at Jimmy's on Thursday. I mean, I'll have kegs of it around in my circles, too, but this will be my first taste.
And that's another story for you to tell another time. Yeah. Jen has so many stories.
Come try the beer.
We love you. And then, Wynn, you guys have Sierra Nevada coming to North Carolina, don't you?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Sorry, man, we're going too much. Sierra Nevada coming to North Carolina.
Absolutely. That announcement was made a couple months ago,
wow.
And we could not be more excited. And we're still holding out for New Belgium. They're supposed to make their announcement soon.
We're holding out for them, too. We need them,
well,
too.
Well, the next time you're on, when we're going to talk about that. And check out Opening Day Bash at Standings. These are all New York bars, good Brazil bars. One day it might be in Chicago. It might be in North Carolina, too. Beer Craft will have its second annual Oyster and Cask event on April 14th. Again, I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com, who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal. You can find Beer Sessions Radio on our Facebook page as well. Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network, and you can Twitter us at @beer_sessions. Thanks to Jen, Carolyn, Tim, and Wynn Bassett for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Bree O'Connor. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.